C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 28. und 29. September 2021 hat eine internationale Konferenz als Online-Veranstaltung zum folgenden Thema stattgefunden: International Finance and World Trade – On the Way to a Democratic and Social Ecological Transformation. Ergänzend dazu gab es am 29. September eine Podiumsdiskussion zum Thema: Welchen globalen Green New Deal brauchen wir und wie soll er aussehen? In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Willkommen zur heutigen Sendung, sagt Jürgen Planck. Der Hintergrund zum Thema: Die Welt erlebt eine Zeit multipler Krisen und Versuche, die internationalen Beziehungen neu zu strukturieren, insbesondere in Bezug auf internationale Finanzen, Welthandel, Nachhaltigkeit, aber auch globale Machtpolitik. Kaum ein Thema scheint in der heutigen Welt relevanter zu sein als die Diskussion um demokratische, soziale und ökologische Wege der Transformation, um eine gute, nachhaltige und gerechte Welt für alle Menschen auf diesem Planeten zu schaffen und die ökologischen Grundlagen unseres Lebens zu retten. Welchen globalen Green New Deal brauchen wir also und wie soll er aussehen? Darüber haben miteinander diskutiert die Ökonomin Ann Pettifor. Sie ist Direktorin von PRIME, Policy Research in Macroeconomics, und Autorin von The Case for the Green New Deal aus dem Jahr 2019. Camila Moreno, sie forscht zu Global Biodiversity and Climate Governance, und Richard Kosul Wright, Direktor der UNCTAD Division on Globalization and Development Strategies und Mitautor von A New Multilateralism for Shared Prosperity, Geneva Principles for a Global Green New Deal, sowie Jürgen Schneider, der Koordinator der österreichischen Klima- und Energiestrategie. Moderiert hat ÖFSE-Direktor Werner Ratzer.
Ann Pettifor has been working on the Green New Deal issues for many years now. She's also known in the academic world, I think, for her work on the financial system and also for her activism in terms of the debt crisis that has haunted much of the global south in the 1980s and 1990s.
Pettifor gibt eingangs Greta Thunberg recht, die an die Vereinten Nationen gerichtet meinte, es gebe zu viele leere Worte von Verantwortungsträgerinnen.
Bla bla, green economy, bla bla, net zero, bla bla, net zero by 2030, more bla bla. And she is so right. At the moment, the debate around the Green New Deal, the global Green New Deal, is not global and it's not serious. And I would like to argue that there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is that we do not have a system of international coordination and cooperation between states, between democracies, between societies. Instead, we are governed at a global level by the market, by the invisible hand of the market. The governments and politicians have, if you like, delegated power, political power, economic power, financial power to markets. They've ceded their power to govern to markets, whether those are capital markets, whether those are markets in pharmaceuticals, in drugs, whether those are markets in decarbonization. We've seen that very, very starkly when John Kerry, introducing Biden's program for a Green New Deal, for what he called a Green New Deal, was that his first appeal was to Wall Street to beg. The United States of America, the most powerful government in the world, the richest government in the world, its representative literally got on his knees and begged Wall Street to come to the rescue of the government and to deliver the Green New Deal. And the same applies here in Britain, and the same applies across the world. We're leaving it up to markets and those active in markets, particularly the big hedge funds, the big asset management funds, to deploy the immense resources that they now have mobilized and to invest those resources in a green economy. And as a result, politicians, if you like, are disabled. And it's no wonder that all they can do is go blah, 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 because in fact, they are impotent. And we saw this most strikingly during the pandemic.
Die COVID-19-Pandemie hätte internationale politische Zusammenarbeit erfordert, so Pettifor. Es wäre aber der Pharmaindustrie die Aufgabe gegeben worden, die Impfdosen herzustellen und zu vertreiben.
And the market, of course, will only do so at a certain price and wants to collect, if you like, the rent on its intellectual property at every opportunity. And so as a result, millions of people are dying or going without the vaccine. Societies and economies are weakened. And it's because of A, the impotence of the political class in relation to markets, and B, the failure to coordinate, because markets cannot coordinate, cannot work together at a global level.
Ein Green New Deal sollte international sein und ein Ziel haben, so Pettifor.
Which is to decarbonize an ecosystem which is planetary in its extent. It's not localized, it's not national, it is a global ecosystem and it requires international coordination exactly as the pandemic did. But that's impossible in a world which is governed not just by markets, but in particular by financial markets and not by just any financial markets, but effectively by Wall Street and by the City of London, Frankfurt, and Tokyo.
Um das Überleben des Planeten zu sichern, müsse das internationale Finanzsystem verändert werden, meint Pettifor und nennt zwei Beispiele, die zeigen, dass Veränderungen in diesem Bereich sehr wohl möglich sind.
In 1933, Roosevelt became President of the United States, and overnight, that night, he transformed the international financial system by enabling the United States from dropping out of the gold standard. He dismantled the gold standard overnight, and ultimately the international system was transformed. And again in 1971, and again overnight, President Nixon unilaterally dismantled the international financial architecture known then as Bretton Woods.
Werner Ratzer erteilt das Wort an Camila Moreno. Sie forscht zu Global Biodiversity and Climate Governance und ist Mitglied der Grupo Carta de Belém in Brasilien. Auch an Sie die Frage, welchen Green New Deal braucht es in Zukunft?
What we do not need is one that reiterates and deepens the dynamics that have brought us here. And at this point, I refer to the extreme financialization of the economy that is walking towards the financialization of nature at a scale unseen. And what this deal should look like, so I will defend here that it must prime for the equality of the terms of the engagement between North and South, so that this deal does not turn out to be a Faustian pact where we sell our souls towards what used to be the res public, the public space towards a private or a privatized climate and environmental governance.
Einen Green New Deal braucht es auf zwei Ebenen, so Camila Moreno. Und jeder Deal sei unter politischen Rahmenbedingungen zu sehen.
That has been over the past decade and a half normalizing the green economy. And the second level is that this possibility of a new Green Deal that has been mentioned here, it's only allowed by decades of dismantling the original New Deal and the dismantling of the welfare state. This is one situation in the North, but it's a much more complicated situation in the South where countries have it much far behind. And I could say, for instance, in the case of Brazil, where I come from. So this dismantling of the welfare state has been pari passu with the reassembling of an ecosystem, which is a intellectual, but most of all, an institutional ecosystem of how this governance is going to be privatized. Level one. So where this Green New Deal is going to operate, it's going to be built upon the political mandate of decarbonization. And then I have formulated my own critique of what I call the carbon metrics and how its ultra reductionistic approach can lead to ecological epistemicide, how you erase other forms of knowledge when we quantify and reduce all solutions to carbon. But most importantly, embedded in the decarbonization mandate, there is the whole net zero offsets, insets, and the mechanisms through which North and South are going to play from here on within the regime of the Paris Agreement.
Zudem, so Moreno, befinden wir uns gerade in einer digitalen Transformation. Sie wirft Fragen auf wie: Wer setzt die Digitalisierung mit welcher Agenda um? Und was bedeutet dies demokratiepolitisch, so Camila Moreno? Als zentralen Aspekt auch für zukünftige Nord-Süd-Beziehungen sieht Moreno die Landfrage.
I'm referring to land that has water and has the capacity to absorb energy from the sun and through the photosynthesis to produce the biomass. The biomass that will allow new materials, new fuels, transformation of food system, etc.
Auch im Landwirtschaftssektor ortet Moreno eine enorme Transformation, bei der die Länder des Südens zum einen Produkte und Rohstoffe liefern und andererseits Dünger aus dem Norden ankaufen.
Countries in the south pressure, of course, under the austerity regimes, because if the austerity is not the rule anymore under COVID for many northern countries, it is still the rule for the southern countries. So countries more and more deprived of public budgeting and being pushed, nudged towards public-private partnerships, towards the framework of environmental and social governance and towards impact investment.
Der dritte Input zur Podiumsdiskussion vom 29. September 2021 kommt von Richard Kozul Wright. Er ist Direktor der UNCTAD Division on Globalization and Development Strategies und Mitautor von A New Multilateralism for Shared Prosperity, Geneva Principles for a Global Green New Deal. Moderator Werner Ratzer.
UNCTAD and Richard in particular have been at the forefront of, I would argue, international organizations that have produced rather critical reports and assessments of the role of the current financial system. And within the proposals that UNCTAD has been issuing during the last couple of years, particularly the Geneva Principles, have also outlined a couple of, if you want, essential elements for an alternative form of finance and alternative financial institutions. I suppose you will also refer to these Geneva principles that you and fellow colleagues have produced for your proposal on a global Green New Deal.
Zunächst führt Kozul Wright vier Ebenen des New Deals von Roosevelt der 1930er Jahre aus, der eine Reaktion auf die Weltwirtschaftskrise war, und parallelisiert diese zum Green New Deal von heute.
So the old New Deal had those four components: recovery, regulation, redistribution and rights. And in a sense, I think the Green New Deal, as we think about it, also needs to have all those four components if it is going to tackle the 21st century challenges around global warming, growing inequality and unequal development across the world.
Es stelle sich die Frage nach der Finanzierung eines Green New Deals, sagt Kozul Wright und zitiert Keynes.
To some extent, we think it's self-financing, given that a successful jobs and investment plan creates larger incomes from which taxes are derived. And we can go into the multiplier arguments and the other Keynesian parts of that story, if you like. But there is, of course, a need for progressive taxation as part of the financing strategy and a rewiring of the massive subsidies that states already use in fossil fuels, in large-scale agriculture, in defense spending, etc. And know that Keynes's famous phrase has come back into the discussion in the pandemic, that whatever we need, we can afford to. We have the resources, the financial resources at least, to deliver. This is not a problem of the shortage of financial resources. It's a challenge about priorities we set and the alliances that are created, the political alliances to deliver on those priorities.
Süd-Süd-Kooperationen stehen auf der Agenda der UNCTAD, der United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, so Richard Kozul Wright.
It's very weak, in my opinion, but there are certainly elements of that that have emerged over the last 10 years that we take some comfort from, including access to finance. I noticed another hit to the Chinese experience in the Financial Times today, blaming Chinese debt for the problem, the indebtedness problems of developing countries. Again, the hypocrisy is massive. And most developing countries cannot deliver a Green New Deal under the current debt pressures that many of them face. And the call for debt relief, debt cancellation, I think, is a necessary condition of anybody who wants to see developing countries participate in a sustainable and just transition.
Mit der folgenden Frage bindet Werner Ratzer Jürgen Schneider in die Diskussion ein. Er ist der Koordinator der österreichischen Klima- und Energiestrategie.
From your perspective, in terms of really trying to implement environmental reforms in the European and Austrian context in particular, what are your core elements that you see as the most critical issues, the most pressing issues that need to be further developed and implemented in the context of the European Union and Austria?
We really need a basic transformation of the energy system, of the mobility system, of the built environment system, and last but not least, of the food and agricultural system. We now have a European climate law, which entered into force in July this year, which does not only include the climate neutrality 2050, but also the minus 55, at least net minus 55% for 2030. We are well aware that with current policies, with existing measures, we are far away from reaching that target. Carbon pricing obviously plays a central role in the European architecture of the European Green Deal. You all know we have an European emission trading system, which has been criticized widely, partly for good reasons, but which is now starting to work. As you all might know, now the emission trading currently covers the energy sector and the industry, and there's a proposal to extend that to mobility and housing.
Jürgen Schneider sagt abschließend zu Plänen für Österreich.
We are starting with the Citizens Assembly to discuss climate-related, in particular mitigation action.
Richard Kosul-Wright beantwortet anschließend die folgende Frage aus dem Publikumschat zur Diskussion.
I think the main challenge is that the ruling elites in the global south are in a pact with powerful forces in the north. Where might the forces for south-south collaboration come from?
We've advocated very strongly for using the Marshall Plan model. Some people disapprove of it, but we see it as a very useful way of thinking about it. And again, it's the elites in the north that resist. I mean, the problem is elites in the north, right? I mean, I think there was a recognition in the 1940s and 50s that rebuilding Europe was good for everybody, right? They've never made that leap to thinking, which was part of the old New Deal, funnily enough. The old New Deal has understood this. You know, bringing up the South was not just good for the South, it was good for the North. That's why the founders of Bretton Woods had us believe that they would create a system that would do just that, right? And the Marshall Plan was very much in that spirit.
Moderator Werner Ratzer spricht in der Folge die von Richard Kosul-Wright konstatierte mangelnde internationale Zusammenarbeit an.
Given this dire strait or this dire situation in terms of the lack of international cooperation, it seems to me now that also, and this, you know, narrative about the geopolitical rivalry and conflict between the United States and China, between the democratic liberal West and the authoritarian East, we might get into a, you know, rather problematic political dynamic where also in the European Union, people also on the left say, well, okay, if international coordination and cooperation is not working, we have to look after ourselves. And that also means that we have to introduce certain measures such as a carbon border adjustment mechanism, which, you know, given the lack of an international solution to the problem of carbon leakage or the problem of decarbonization, we have to do it on our own. And it seems to me that this is a development that is not completely unproblematic. So what is your take, and that is a question to all of you, on which elements and which factors would facilitate international cooperation, given that we are now entering into the COP26 in Glasgow and all these other international events, and that it is clear to everybody in the room, at least, that given the global dimension of the problems we're dealing with, we need these kind of international cooperative efforts. What are key elements in promoting that kind of cooperation at the international level?
Dazu N. Pettifor.
So I think we have to be awake to what is really happening at the moment. And, you know, we can have these dreams and talks about coordination and cooperation. What we're actually facing is the rise of fascism. I really think that we have to understand the seriousness of it. We already have states that are effectively fascist in existence. And then we have the threat of Trump returning to the United States and returning to the presidency of the United States. It is not impossible. Martin Wolf has an opinion piece in the Financial Times today warning very clearly about this. It is something that keeps me awake at night. So what we're seeing is we're living in a world where, as Karl Polanyi argued, people would look for protection from the uncontrollable market forces that are out there. And they would look especially for a strong man, and it's invariably a man, to protect them from these market forces. And a strong man comes along and claims to do that while at the same time enriching himself. And we've seen that in the case of Donald Trump, and we've seen that in the case of, in my country, Zuma, but we've also seen it in the case of Modi and Bolsonaro and wherever, and honestly, almost wherever you look, right? And so in the absence of this international institutional cooperation and with the control of the global economy in the hands of invisible, unaccountable market players, societies are already reacting in an extraordinarily defensive way. The border adjustment tax is just one of the most moderate ways in which people are looking for protection. You know, the requests elsewhere are much fiercer. I mean, Bolsonaro, I think, is terrifying. So I think we have to wake up, we liberals, you know, and talking about all of this stuff and how it's really nice to have these academic discussions. But our societies are threatened, and we simply are blind to what is happening. We're blind to the market forces that are operating beyond our control. The people are not. The people are scared. Their living standards have declined. Their children cannot go to university. They cannot, all of them, find roofs over their heads. They're worried about health. They can't get a vaccine. And in the case of Afghanistan and the Middle East, they've been bombed to smithereens, and they can't get money. And naturally, they are going to turn towards, you know, authoritarian, nationalist and fascist states. And I really think, you know, this is what is so sad about the European Union. It has the opportunity of bringing together a group of states who could act in unison and who could take the progressive lead around the world away from the United States, which is, in my view, you know, where the democracy is degraded, and, you know, and China, where democracy isn't even on the agenda. The European Union could play a leadership role, a progressive leadership role. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves is why not? Now, you know, I'm in Britain. Brexit is, in, for me, is part of the rise of that nationalism and that protectionism, which is most unhealthy. And right now, you know, we're in a situation where we can't get fuel for our cars and our grocery shelves are emptying. And the Prime Minister's worried that the people won't be able to have turkeys at Christmas. You know, we're in a terrible mess, but we're governed by a government which really has no respect for the law, has very little respect for the democratic process, and will do everything it can, as is happening in the United States, to undermine that process. You know, so I just think we must stop all this lovely talk about how nice it would be to be blah, blah. And I'm back to Greta Thunberg here. When reality, we can't tackle the climate crisis because we're now facing a crisis of authoritarianism. It's very scary. I do think we have to wake up to this.
And Richard Kozul right against?
The North is unbelievably hypocritical. One of the features of neoliberalism is that they've never played by the rules that they preach to other people. In the international economy, they've never done that. They've always used industrial policy. As they were preaching austerity to the South, they were running up massive budget deficits themselves, Reagan being the classic example of that, the beginning of this program. So the hypocrisy is hardwired into the way in which advanced economies look at the hyper-globalized economy. And the South needs to exploit that. And of course, who's exploited that successfully? China. And now the Western world is now kind of frothing at the mouth and ultra troubled by the rise of China. But China has exploited that system by doing what the North does, essentially. And other developing countries need to learn lessons from that.
Welche Voraussetzungen sieht Richard Kozul Wright also für die erfolgreiche Implementierung eines Green New Deals in den Ländern des Südens, in den sogenannten Entwicklungsländern?
Developing countries need more policy space to be able to implement the kinds of elements of a Green New Deal that I have outlined. And the current discussion of WTO reform essentially amounts to more liberalization. Whether it's under the umbrella of trade facilitation doesn't really matter. It's essentially a liberalization agenda. And that's not appropriate for the kinds of policies that we think are necessary within the developing world, but also the developed world, to undertake the kind of green transition that we're talking about. So to get the Green New Deal, both developed and developing, we need a multilateral system, that's for sure. But we need a multilateral system that doesn't operate on the kind of neoliberal principles that have dominated it for the last 40 years.
In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio haben wir von der Podiumsdiskussion »Welchen globalen Green New Deal brauchen wir und wie soll er aussehen?« berichtet, die als Teil der Konferenz »International Finance and World Trade – On the Way to a Democratic and Social Ecological Transformation« am 29. September 2021 online stattgefunden hat. Informationen zur Konferenz findet man auf finance-and-trade.net. Ein Veranstaltungshinweis: Am 18. November 2021 findet von 9 bis 15 Uhr die folgende Online-Veranstaltung statt: Green Deal, der europäische Beitrag zur Umsetzung der SDGs. Was verspricht er und wie können wir uns an seiner Umsetzung beteiligen? Das ist eine Living Library-Veranstaltung für Schulklassen. Informationen dazu und zu allen weiteren Angeboten im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung, etwa zur C3-Bibliothek, aber auch zu C3 Radio, sind auf www.zentrum3.at abrufbar. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.